Salil is on the board of PEN International, a contributing editor to The Caravan. That does it for today's broadcast. We have a job opening at Democracy Now!, director of development leading our fundraising. You can check out the details at democracynow.org and apply there. Democracy Now! is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharifa Bokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tommy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. All right, that's about enough of the theme. Time to begin the program. It's Off the Wall for this Tuesday in late July. I think it's, what, the 23rd or something? Yeah, okay, whatever. It's summer's just going by at a really fast pace. And, boy, we have seen some... Oh, by the way, this is Emmanuel. Kyle is not here right now. He's out doing errands. And it's been quite a week. I'm kind of under the weather, so if I sound a little out of it, it's because I'm a little out of it. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going around. Some things are definitely going around, including heat and humidity, but we'll get through it one way or another. All right, so yeah, this last week has been insane, to say the least. First of all, we had the Republican National Convention from Milwaukee last week, and what fun that was. Oh, boy. One day after another of unbridled craziness, with every speaker outdoing the last one, as far as, I guess, just gross extra patriotism and fear-mongering and everything else they wanted to trot out under the sun there. Yeah, I don't know. We were hoping that the message would be a bit more, not conciliatory, but at least less incendiary. You know, meaning not portraying the other side, i.e. Democrats, as the devil and something that needs to be... feared and battled and taken down, however. No, that didn't last long at all. It wasn't hard to do, but apparently they couldn't modify the speeches they'd already written. Maybe they didn't have time, maybe they didn't have the ability to do this in one form or another. But they were as filled with hatred and ignorance as you could possibly imagine, and that does not exclude Trump at all. What they did with the assassination attempt on Trump the previous Saturday, you know, everybody was saying, let's all come together on this horrible incident that happened, this near tragedy that almost happened. And let's try and keep the dialogue respectful and not use any of this for political gains, such as saying, well, the guy is a registered Republican. He was one of Trump's own that tried to kill him for one reason or another. Who knows why? We may never know, but he had very easy access to a very high-powered weapon that no human really needs access to unless they're fighting in a war. You know, that could be considered politicizing, even though it's not really politicizing, it's kind of pointing out some very important facts. But sure, it's the RNC week. Let's let them go with what they want to go with. Yeah, it didn't work, though. It didn't work because what they were doing was taking every possible opportunity to portray Trump as godlike, as somebody who escaped the assassin's bullet because God did it, because he's a god himself. He's a leader of a cult. It was so pathetic, so insane to hear this constantly being drummed into our heads, that he has these superhuman feats, that this is proof that he is the chosen one. It was so shameful. And, you know, I found it hysterical, but they didn't. They took it seriously. And they truly believe that he struck down the devil. You know, it's one thing to celebrate something bad not happening, but to attach all of this this cult-like status to it, when in actuality, you know, it was just basically a question of millimeters and luck. And yeah, be happy about that. But no, they couldn't stop there. They had to attach all of this meaning to it and proof that this, beyond anything else, shows who Jesus wants as the president. And then, of course, there are pictures of him being supported by God. It's, you know, I don't want to get into it. It's just, it's too disgusting and offensive. But that's the RNC. I guess you can expect that sort of thing from the RNC. After all, it's, you know, it's a big political rally. It's something that only happens once every 4 years. So maybe we give them a little bit of leeway. Because afterwards, after the RNC, surely clearer heads will prevail. And this kind of combative talk will finally abate. And we'll be able to carry on this political campaign as respectful adversaries. You know, like other countries do. What's this? Oh, we have an example of this from an Ohio Republican, I believe. This was, what, yesterday? Yesterday. Okay, let's listen.
In the fight for the soul of our nation. We are in a fight for our kids and our grandkids, a fight that we can never imagine. I believe wholeheartedly Donald Trump and Butler County's J.D. Vance are the last chance to save our country politically. I'm afraid if we lose this one, it's going to take a civil war to save the country, and it will be saved. It's the greatest experiment in the history of mankind. And if we come down to a civil war, I'm glad we got people like Schmitty and the Bikers for Trump on our side.
Well, I guess I was wrong. Civil war. Not civil war from conflict, from terrorism, from anything like that. No, civil war. If our side doesn't win, that's the only way to save the country. And it will be saved. The country will be saved because there will be civil war. Yeah, civil war will happen if Trump does not win. That is the message from Ohio State Senator George Lang yesterday at an Ohio rally for J.D. Vance. Who? J.D. Vance. He is the vice presidential candidate. Trump Vance. Trump Vance, does that sound familiar? You know, the last time it was Trump Pence, they only have to replace two letters. You know, I guess they will only get single syllable vice presidential candidates ending in NCE. Save a lot of printing. But no, that's where this happened. He told the crowd that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are the last chances, or the last chance, actually, to save our country politically. Because it's war if it doesn't happen politically. And you know what? He might be telling the truth, because looking at the way these people present themselves and the things they say, the things they do, the things they stand for, the people that follow them, I don't think they can lose easily. I don't think they can accept a defeat at the ballot box. To them, it would have to be something involving cheating, miscounting, people from other countries, aliens, I don't know. But it's clear they don't believe in the voice of democracy. Now, this guy, George Lang, represents the hometown of vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance. And after endorsing the idea of the Civil War at yesterday's rally, he kind of walked it back afterwards, tried to, saying he regretted using divisive language at a time of political violence. Yeah, maybe that wasn't the best idea. Maybe you should have thought of it differently. Maybe you should have listened to everybody saying, let's stop using divisive language. But instead, you kind of ramped it up and used about as divisive a form of language you could possibly conjure up. And then he used the opportunity to lecture the rest of us, saying that after the rally, he and others need to be more careful with their language. Yes, that means you, listeners. You need to be more careful. This guy, he showed you an example. Yeah. I regret the divisive remarks I made in the excitement of the moment on stage. Especially in light of the assassination attempt of President Trump last week, we should all be mindful of what is said at political events, myself included. And yet, not seeing any calls for this guy to resign, to be kicked out of office, to leave in shame. Instead, he's saying on Twitter that his comments do not accurately reflect my views. I think they do. I think they must. You know, I mean, look, I know what it's like to be excited on stage, to be speaking to a bunch of people. It gets exciting. But you don't really start saying things that you don't believe. I mean, right now here on the radio, it's pretty exciting. You don't know who's out there. And what I say might come out wrong. I might not express myself in the best way. Might stumble over my words. Might even get stage fright. But I'm not likely to start saying things that are completely opposite to what I believe in. That would be weird. So no, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. And I also don't get why there isn't a call for this guy to immediately resign. Look, the Secret Service director testified in front of Congress in what we all knew was going to be a disaster because, you know, when Congress wants their sound bites and they want their pound of flesh, they're going to get it and you're going to pay the price. And everybody knew that was coming. Sure, she said she wasn't going to resign. But Lloyd's of London had it at, what, one day? And I had it at 1.5. And, yeah, she was out of there pretty quickly. That's how these things work. You can say as much as you want as far as I will not step down. Hey, it happened to Menendez today. Senator Menendez said he wouldn't resign. Oh, okay, I'll resign next month. And, of course, we'll get to Biden. We'll get to Biden. The Kamala Harris campaign, spoiler alert, I'm sorry, we didn't reveal the big news yet, did we? It's possible you might have already heard it, though. The Kamala Harris campaign sought to tie Lange's remarks to Trump's declaration of I am your retribution at a rally last year. Remember that? Yeah, I am your retribution. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are running a campaign openly sowing hatred and promising revenge against their political opponents, said campaign spokesperson Amar Moussa in a statement. That's why a Republican official was empowered to predict a civil war while introducing these candidates. And that's reality. That's how things work. But there's another reality. There's a bit of change that has happened. Another earthquake. Political earthquake, that is. And a lot of people were predicting Sunday would be the day that Joe Biden finally said, okay, I'm out. Not going to run for re-election. It was a sacrifice on his part. I think we can all see that. He obviously wanted to run, but the voices were just getting too loud and too numerous for him to be able to weather that storm. Every speaking engagement, every interview, every press conference would be a referendum on whether or not he was capable of exercising his responsibility in the job? Regardless of the fact that many people believed he had no problem in that department. Sure, he had a problem expressing himself, has a problem running marathons or whatever else. But as far as doing the job of president, you might disagree with what he does, but he was able to do the job. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter when all these people are clamoring for you to leave and when that becomes the story that doesn't go away. So, despite the fact that many people still supported him, it started to become something that was only a matter of time. And that time came on Sunday. And in so doing, this is what we talked about for the last couple of weeks. This is turning into a real opportunity to galvanize support for the Democratic ticket. And over the last couple of days, we have seen that. We have seen that. The prospect of Vice President Kamala Harris at the top of a historic presidential ticket in November could energize voters and make abortion rights a galvanizing issue in a potential contest against former President Donald Trump. That's according to some political analysts and Long Island voters. That's from this Newsday story here. One day after President Joe Biden shook up the political universe by announcing he wouldn't seek a second term while endorsing Harris as the party's standard bearer, the vice president quickly began coalescing support Monday for an abbreviated presidential campaign, securing endorsements from a majority of top Democrats nationwide. Now, Harris is 59 years old, and she previously served as San Francisco District Attorney, California Attorney General, and a one-term U.S. Senator. She has the potential to make history as the first woman to serve as the country's commander-in-chief if elected. And if nominated as the Democratic Party's presidential candidate, which is seeming increasingly likely, she would be the first black woman and the first person of South Asian descent to head a major party's presidential ticket. A lot of history here. Ayanna McCalla, 23 years old, Democrat from Baldwin, Long Island, said Monday Harris's nomination would provide a boost of energy to the Democratic ticket, which has lagged since Biden's widely panned debate performance and could redirect the national conversation toward reproductive rights. It's what we should be talking about. It's a major issue. It's something that Trump got rid of. It has to be the topic people are talking about. Of course, he's not a big fan of talking about it. McCalla, a postgraduate student, said it's exciting change. It's something that we've been trying to get going for over a few decades now, so why not? Simone Fuller, a registered Democrat from Hempstead, said she's confident Harris can utilize her personal narrative to drive key voting blocks to the ballot box. She will draw other people in, Fuller said. Women, yes. South Asians, yes. Black women, yes. But Louis Marchione, 74, of Franklin Square, is skeptical. Nowadays, I don't think that the ethnicity nor the race of candidates will affect the voting people, he said. He's a retired government information technology worker and registered conservative who thinks Harris ultimately will hurt the Democratic ticket. But they don't go into why. Oh, well. Kelly Dittmar, director of research at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University, and she's not a Long Islander in the street being interviewed by Newsday. This is somebody who has a lot more knowledge. She said that a voter sharing a gender and racial background with a candidate doesn't usually shift how that person votes in a general election, with the voter's political party often being the deciding factor. And that is true. But of those people, it certainly turns up the enthusiasm level. And I've been seeing a lot of that over the last couple of days. So much more enthusiasm, so much less talk about Trump. Most folks are either going to vote for the person of their party or not vote at all, said Dittmar, who is also an associate professor of political science. Republicans aren't going to switch over and vote for Kamala Harris because she's a woman or because she's black and South Asian. But Dittmar added, enthusiasm can grow when people identify with candidates from their own party, often ensuring they come out to vote, attend a rally, or donate to a campaign. And that certainly has been evidenced in the last couple of days, as Kamala Harris has raised more than I think ever before in any political campaign in a day or two. Something like $100 million? It's an insane amount. But wow. Boris Hirstink, an associate political science professor at Fordham University, said Harris already has energized voters and could solidify support among Democratic voters of color, who make up a sizable chunk of the electorate in several swing states. If you look at the donations that have been coming in since Sunday, I think a lot of that is tied into the fact that Democratic voters are pretty happy with Harris as a replacement for Biden, Hirsink said. Ultimately, the decision as to whether she becomes the party's nominee will be determined by roughly 4,000 Democratic delegates who will hold their nominating convention in Chicago next month. A host of state delegations, including Florida, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, have already pledged to back Harris's candidacy. Members of New York's delegation are expected to hold a call, actually last night, I believe. I don't know what happened, but I think they voted to support Harris. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Michael Dowaziak, a Bohemia-based political consultant who works primarily with Republicans, said a closed-door process for elevating Harris as the party's nominee could diminish excitement among voters for the vice president, turning some off and handing Trump a ready-made talking point. I don't disagree. I think having this out in the open is the best way, and I think Harris winning that is also a great way to have the wind at her back and to have renewed enthusiasm for the entire process. Harris must also craft a strategy for defending the Biden administration's record on immigration, inflation, two key issues in which polls show Republicans have a large advantage when it comes to voter approval. Of course, a lot of that is based on misinformation and facts that simply are not there. And that has to be discussed. That has to be pointed out. Numbers don't lie. We're back to talking to people on the street. Nicole DeResperis, 54, a registered Republican from South Hempstead, said Monday she thinks Harris will be unable to make a successful case to voters, citing the vice president's actions on immigration and border security. I'm scared for our country, and I really hope that Trump does win, she said. Yeah. You know, there are statistics on the effect that undocumented immigrants have on this country. You could listen to Trump, you could listen to the RNC, you can listen to all the misinformation being passed around out there, or you can check the actual facts and figures that show they have a lower crime rate, much lower crime rate, and they improve the economy. And they really want to become citizens of this country and should have the same chance that so many of our ancestors had. Okay, let's talk to more Republicans because that's always fun. Mike Whale, 69, East Meadow, said the departure of 81-year-old Biden from the race amounts to addition by subtraction, removing the 46th president's age and mental acuity from the conversation. Two old white guys, maybe it's time for a change. Well, a retired pension, I'm sorry, Wheel. Wheel is his name. Okay, Wheel, a retired pension consultant for a transit workers union, I wonder which one, said of Biden and Trump, I think a younger woman is good for the Democrats. Wow, okay, a Republican actually giving an honest opinion about this could help the Democrats. Amazing. But while Harris's gender, age, and race may animate some Democratic voters, experts said reproductive rights remain the party's most potent issue, particularly in the wake of the 2022 U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. Harris, an unflinching supporter of abortion rights, is the right messenger to make the case that the nation's highest court went too far. said Lauren Corcoran Doolin, an independent political consultant from Belmore who served as a Biden delegate and a Hillary Clinton delegate. This year has always been about women and making sure that we send the message in New York State, here on Long Island, and throughout America that we will not allow our rights to be rolled back for our daughters and granddaughters. She's also the vice chairwoman of the Nassau County Democratic Party. Laura Goetz, 66, a registered Democrat from Islip, said Monday she would vote for Harris, who she hopes would work toward reversing the Supreme Court's 2022 decision on abortion. She's all for women's rights, Goetz said, who left the Republican Party, by the way, when Trump first ran in 2016. And finally, Peggy Lamon, 65, of Bayshore, registered Democrat who supports Harris, said abortion rights will play a critical role in determining the next occupant of the White House. Women's rights are just going backward in this country. I worry about my granddaughters. And yeah, this is what's being discussed nationwide now. Not the latest craziness of Trump. Not how old Joe Biden is today, but actual issues. And that is important. That is really important. Okay, this late breaking news. Answering a question that nobody really asked. Joe Manchin says he will not serve as Kamala Harris's vice president. Okay, Joe, you know, I don't think there was really much danger of that happening. I'm pretty sure nobody was going to ask you that. But he said he would not consider serving as Vice President Harris's running mate, arguing it is time for a new generation. Yeah, okay. Let's go with that. Let's go with you're just too damn old. Nothing else. Perfectly fine, every other regard. But hold on a second, Trump. Didn't you say only a couple of days ago that, in fact, on Sunday, when Harris announced that she was going to be the candidate, you said you were going to switch back to being a Democrat because you became an independent when Democrats became too liberal for you. You became an independent from West Virginia and said, I'm going to switch back to being a Democrat so I can register to run for president at the convention. Yeah, I heard it. I heard it. Plain as day, he said it. So I'm not sure what happened to those plans. But he's not going to be either president or vice president, apparently. And he's not seeking re-election in the Senate in November. He's going to have a lot of free time. Oh, and there's more. There's more breaking news here. Okay, this is fascinating. Representative Andy Ogles, who you likely have never heard of before, a Republican from Tennessee, has introduced a resolution calling for the impeachment of Kamala Harris for high crimes and misdemeanors. Wow, I had your finger on the trigger for that one. He argues that during her term as vice president, Harris has demonstrated extraordinary incompetence in the execution of her duties and responsibilities. I see. Specifically, Ogles claims Harris has exhibited a stark refusal to uphold the existing immigration laws and a palpable indifference to people of the United States suffering as a result of the ongoing southern border crisis. Harris has not responded to the resolution, which I believe just happened, so not much time to actually respond to this nonsense. Since launching her White House bid following Biden's departure from the race on Sunday, Harris has faced a flurry of GOP criticism over her handling of a surge of migrants at the southern border, which, as we mentioned, is a major Republican rallying cry. Easily defeated with the introduction of facts and figures. Among the various attacks that she is facing is a potential floor vote led by Republican Conference Chair Elise Stefanik, Republican of New York, to condemn Harris over her handling of the U.S.-Mexico border, though with the Senate still in Democratic control, it's unlikely even a House-passed impeachment would be confirmed by the Senate. So, big waste of time. Meanwhile, you have You have this tactic as well. That a bunch of Republicans are exercising. They're pushing on Kamala Harris to invoke the 25th Amendment to replace Biden from office and effectively declare Biden unable to fulfill his responsibilities as president. And those calls, of course, come in the wake of Biden's dismal debate performance last month. But they really ramped it up when Harris announced on Sunday. And it's hilarious to see how upset the Republicans are now that Biden is out. Trump is actually saying he wants a refund because he's been preparing his campaign against Biden, and now the campaign isn't against Biden anymore. Yeah, he wants a refund. And more craziness. The Republicans obviously don't want to run against Kamala Harris. In fact, over the past few weeks, they have been doing whatever they can to keep Biden in office, to keep Biden in the campaign, so that he would be a weaker candidate against Trump. But now that he is not running, they're putting pressure on to, for whatever reason, have him resign, put Harris in the top spot. Maybe she'll be more open to attack there, more responsible for everything that happens. Our local congressman, Nick LaLota, big fan, had some things to say. You know, I was going to come on here today. I was going to say that Nick LaLota wrote a very nice letter last week in the wake of the assassination attempt against Trump, calling for people to tone it down, to get together, to be civilized. I looked, I combed, I filtered. I didn't see any snarkiness. I didn't see any hidden agenda. It seemed sincere. It seemed real. A rare thing. And then a couple days ago, he tweeted. A three-part tweet. We should genuinely wish President Biden well. After 50 years of service, it's good to see his family finally acknowledging his mental decline. Oh, you dick. Okay, that's where we're going to go, huh? Prioritizing his health is essential, and I hope he takes the necessary steps for his well-being. That's the first part. You know those people, those so-called friends, who always are looking out for your best interest, but your best interest in their eyes is never really your best interest. It's always something that is an advantage for them, something that they feel they have the ability to push you around. And what Nick LaLota has done here is basically seen a weak spot that he wishes to take advantage of. Okay, part two. President Biden's obvious lack of mental acuity requires him to resign so America can have a commander-in-chief with basic cognitive abilities. Our national security is at risk, and the 25th Amendment must be considered if he does not step down. Oh, you dick. I mean, oh, this guy is a passive aggressiveness, and it's so annoying. So beneath almost anyone, really. Maybe not beneath Nick LaLota, but look, the guy made a decision not to run. He could still run rings around any logic you come up with. Maybe he can't speak the sentences as quickly as you can. Maybe his voice is raspy. Maybe he doesn't move as fast as he used to. But he'd still kick your ass. In any forum. All right, part three, conclusion. America needs accountability from national Democrats and the media, like CNN's John Avlon, who covered up Biden's decline. Weird. Why would you attack CNN's John Avalon? Americans deserve leaders who tell the truth when it matters most, not those who mislead for political gain. Okay, so for those who don't know, John Avalon is running against Nick LaLota for the 1st Congressional District here on Long Island. So by using this situation for his political gain, he hopes to make us feel hostility towards this guy named John Avalon, who apparently represents the mass media and all the lies that they perpetuate. Whereas Nick LaLota represents Congress and all the lies they perpetuate, not to mention a few doozies of his own. So, yeah, this three-part tweet is just so shameful. Taking an historic event, an elderly president sacrificing his future political career for the good of the country, being completely able to do the job, certainly till the end of this year, and to be jumped on like that, to be told that your mental facilities are falling apart, that we must invoke the 25th Amendment, we must put Harris in the Oval Office right now, and John Avalon is the devil. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that's more like what we expect. So, Harris has already had a presidential rally in Milwaukee today. Energetic, they're calling it. Attacking Trump, all the things she should be doing. I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this race. I'm looking forward to the debate, or hopefully more than one debate, between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, because she will wipe the floor with him without any doubt, without any question. I am looking forward to that. But here's the thing that continues to bother me. You know, with all this history happened over the weekend, Biden dropping out, Harris taking up the mantle, the New York Times decides to go with another Trump story, all about how Trump's new rival may bring out his harshest instincts. That's the headline. Don't even name Harris, just Trump's new rival may bring out his harshest instincts. Who cares? The guy is scum. The guy is going to be saying horrible things no matter what. He's a racist. He's a sexist. He's a criminal. I mean, we don't have enough time to list all the things that he is. Why? Why is this the story? So, yeah, it's basically a huge story about all the dirty tricks that lie ahead, that I guess are good for newspapers and mass media. But let's focus more on what candidates actually bring to the table. All right, what else is going on? Oh, Netanyahu's in Washington. Why is Netanyahu in Washington? Whose idea was this? All of Congress? I mean, if this guy gets away unscathed without a Boston cream pie in his face, you know, then I don't know what to believe in anymore. A war criminal, somebody who has no regard for human life whatsoever. That's not like his human life. Thinking it's okay to kill 40,000 people. To be invited to our capital. That's shameful. And I hope whoever is in the same room as him is able to express themselves somehow. Whether it's turning around, booing loudly, throwing the aforementioned pie, whatever. We still have voices. And to those idiots who say that, oh, if you criticize Netanyahu, you're anti-Semitic. Well, tell that to the many Jews who condemn him in no uncertain terms. The situation is going nowhere. But, you know, at least with all the hostility against Biden for his support. That's not going to be an issue anymore. Because Biden's not running. And, you know, we've seen Biden adjust his views, as he has done many times. But I don't think that was enough to placate people. And I think a fresh approach is what is needed now. And again, you know, kind of conversely to the Times always putting Trump front and center, Trump isn't given the credit he deserves for making the awful situation in Palestine in the first place by excluding Palestinians from talk of a future state or the future in general, to moving the embassy to Jerusalem, to all kinds of things that inevitably would lead to a decline in the situation. So hopefully this results in something a little bit more positive. Fingers crossed. Okay, you know what? We're going to close tonight with something that has been gnawing at me for a while. You might have heard, I'm sure you've heard this. People on TV, people on C-SPAN, especially Republicans, almost exclusively Republicans, when they're talking about the other party. Have you noticed recently? They say Democrat Party instead of the Democratic Party that we've all been used to hearing over our lives. It's almost like a test. When you hear somebody say that in a conversation, stop. Don't talk to them anymore. They have drunk the Kool-Aid. It is over. You're not going to get anywhere. For someone to be so easily manipulated to change basic words to show that you're loyal. Yeah, that's not democracy. That's not freedom of thought. That's falling in line, which is pretty much the Republicans' motto. All right, so Democrat Party, this according to Wikipedia, is an epithet pejorative for the Democratic Party of the United States, often used in a disparaging fashion by the party's opponents. While use of the term started out as non-hostile, it has grown in its negative use since the 1940s, in particular by members of the Republican Party in party platforms, partisan speeches, and press releases, as well as by conservative commentators and third-party politicians. UPI, United Press International, reported back in August 1984 that the term Democrat Party had been employed in recent years by some right-wing Republicans because the party's Democratic name implied that the Democrats were the only true adherents of democracy. Interesting. May I point out that we live in a republic. So what does that say about Republicans? Yeah, words. Language expert Roy Cuprud said it was used by Republicans who disliked the implication that Democratic Party implied to listeners that Democrats are somehow the anointed custodians of the concept of democracy. According to Oxford Dictionaries, the use of Democrat rather than the adjective Democratic is in keeping with a long-standing tradition among Republicans of dropping the IC in order to maintain a distinction from the broader positive associations of the adjective Democratic with democracy and egalitarianism. Political commentator William Safire wrote in 1993 that the Democrat of Democrat Party does conveniently rhyme with autocrat, plutocrat, and worst of all, bureaucrat. In 2006, Hendrik Hertzberg wrote in The New Yorker, "There's no great mystery about the motives behind this deliberate misnaming. Democrat Party is a slur, or intended to be, a handy way to express contempt. Aesthetic judgments are subjective, of course, but Democrat Party is jarring, verging on ugly. It fairly screams rat." Among authors of dictionaries and usage guides who state that the use of Democrat as an adjective is ungrammatical are the aforementioned Roy Cuprud, Bergen Evans, William and Mary Morris. In particular, the latter have written, "It is the idiotic creation of some of the least responsible members of the Republican Party." Now, this is all before Trump. You know, many of us haven't even heard it used this way until the days of Trump, but this has been going on for a while. It just really picked up recently, so that you hear it all the time. So when you're hearing a report by a news commentator or some quotation from a political leader of one sort or another, if you hear the phrase Democrat Party, you know what side they're on. They've told you. It's not a conversation. It's a sermon from the cult. And that's unfortunately how things are in this country right now. It's weird, you know, you hear these things, you realize this doesn't quite sound right. And you do a little bit of research into why they're saying it this way. And, you know, I caught the BBC saying it this way. I'm not sure why they're saying it that way. I'm not sure if there's a language issue there or if it's sloppiness on their part, which they're not usually sloppy, but anything's possible. It's important to keep your ears open and to look for things that just don't sound right, because odds are they're not right. Just like crazy statistics that are designed to make you afraid, saying that crime is skyrocketing when crime is actually dropping. It doesn't make a difference to the person who's a victim of the crime, which is why they usually talk to the people who are the victims. So that you feel, well, this person was a victim, so crime is bad, which is something we all know in the first place. But mere statistics, the real numbers, they show you what the truth is. All right. Well, that's what democracy is all about, isn't it? Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you in one form or another next week. Stay awake. Keep asking questions. Keep listening to WUSB. Good night.
It's come through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming. Far away, democracy is
Democracy is coming.